get going a little bit. So we are talking today about carbanos that, interestingly enough, are not discussed at length in a lot of the Rishonim, and we'll see why for fairly obvious reasons. But these are a series of carbanos that are found in Chumash really at length, and they're critically important. They're also, in a certain sense, carbanos that are almost like rule breakers in the classic carbanos that maybe we are used to. And hopefully at this point in the Limud, we're more sensitive to when things sort of break certain rules and the like. And we're referring to carbanos that appear to be more of a hora'a sha'a. These are short-term or temporary carbanos that were offered rarely in history. They're not carbanos that we anticipate us ever offering, that we're going to go to the mikdash and offer these. And we're talking in particular about the carbanos of the miluim. The Torah in Parshas Tetzaveh, as well as the Torah in Parshas Tzav, the Tzav of the way beginning of Parshas Shmini, tell us that prior to the mikdash or the mishkan really functioning, so there was a time period where they were sort of inaugurated. The inauguration time period, we're going to consecrate the mikdash, the mishkan, the kohanim. There are going to be these 7 days. And these 7 days, a lot was going to be happening. Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be doing the avoda. Moshe was functioning as the Kohen Gadol for these 7 days. And we were sort of bringing in, and not only like sanctifying the Mishkan and the Mikdash, we were really also trying to sanctify Aaron HaKohen and the Kohanim to get them ready. Again, in Tetzaveh is the initial tzivoy, the command to do it. The end of Parsha Tzav is sort of the implementation of it, and it's getting us ready for the beginning of Parsha Shmini, Vayihi Bayom HaShmini, and now we're finally ready to sort of have a regular and functioning kind of a mikdash. What we're going to try to do is get a little bit of background information about what was going on in those days of the Miluim. It's a lot of psukim. If you look at the sheet of what's going on in Parsha Tzav, what's going on in Parsha Tzav, there's a lot going on for obvious reasons. There's a lot to do. A lot to do as far as transforming the Mizbeach and the Mishkan or the Mikdash. We're using those terms interchangeably, but really we refer to the Mishkan. A lot to do as far as Aaron HaKohen and the like. A lot of questions to ask as far as status at that particular time period. There's a lot to sort of unpackage as far as what exactly is going on in those 7 days. We're also told, and here's what's most critical for us, there were carbanos that were offered during those days. There were 3 carbanos that were offered. One was a par echad, a par that was offered as a chatas. Intriguing. We're not sure exactly what sin that chatas was exactly brought for. Because we've learned enough about chatas, we're probably thinking already, is it possible it's not even really brought for a sin? Because maybe chatas, it means something else, like the word chitoy is, those of us maybe coming to Eretz Yisrael this year, you know, are going to have to learn the Hebrew word to sanitize something, chitoy. But that's a chatas. There are also 2 aisles that are offered. One ayil is offered as an ola, and another is offered as a shlamim. We have these sort of like 3 different kinds of karbanos, which are going to be offered here during the Shivas Yimei HaMiluim. A chatas, an ola, and a shlamim. We pointed out in the past that I believe Rosenzweig has noted based on a gemara in the beginning of Maseches Menachos, that it's always intriguing when you have someone or a situation which demands not just 1 karban, but a unit of karbanos. That a chatas on its own, we know what a chatas does. An ola on its own, that's 1 thing. But sometimes when you have a series of karbanos brought as a unit, so maybe in a certain sense it's really not a regular chatas or a regular ola or a regular shlamim, they sort of come together to accomplish a greater purpose, which we have to sort of uncover what exactly that is. I want to focus a bit on the carbanos. The way I want to do it, there's a lot here, and we're trying to sort of focus on 1 sort of set of carbanos or 1 carbon a day. I want to try to focus on 3 or 4 different issues. It'll be more, I guess, what we would call smaller ha'aros as far as what the issues exactly are. And we'll try to do our best. 1 issue is going to be Moshe Rabbeinu's role as a Kohen Gadol during this time,
in Tzav here and in Tetzaveh. The second issue that we're going to talk about is the status of the Mishkan during these times. It's like a real functioning Mishkan. It's something else to figure out what exactly it is. I want to speak a bit about this Chatas, what's going on with this Chatas. And I want to also speak about the end, categorizing this Karban. These are Karban Yachids, they're Karban Sibors. What exactly are they? So we're going to try to think about a bunch of different issues. I think they'll come together to sort of give us a picture of what was really going on in the Shivas Yimei HaMiluim. Unsurprisingly, the Rambam does not count these Karbanos, or this Avodah, in Sefer HaMitzvos, because it's a temporary, it's a Horah Shah. It doesn't really get quoted for the Rambam. There's no enduring long-term mitzvah here. It's how we consecrate and how we initially establish it. There are discussions about what's going to be Bizman Bayis Shlishi. That's a bit of a discussion. But it's not typically assumed to be a mitzvah. Even Rav Sadia Gaon, which seems to count the Miluim as a mitzvah, the Achronim explain how it's not really referring to the Miluim. It's referring to something else, as we'll see hopefully in a day or so. But let's unpackage a little bit what was going on here. What's everything that's really happening? Hopefully we can put it together in a way which is meaningful. The larger point I would say by introducing it is that it's very likely in almost all the things that we're going to talk about, we are breaking certain rules. It's not a formal Mishkan yet. And therefore, we may find in the transition from it being nothing to a Mishkan, some sort of an in-between status, a lack of clarity about things, and that we may, which is not surprising, that there are different halachas of karbanos when it functions as a regular mikdash, and now. Let's begin with the first ha'ar, which is the following. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah tells us, is serving as the Kohen Gadol during these 7 days. The Gemara in Tainis on Daf Yud Aleph wonders what kind of clothing did Moshe Rabbeinu wear during these 7 days. Like my wife and I often joke that if one of us is at a wedding and not the other, the questions that we ask about what happened at the wedding, so I'm really intrigued to know, like, who got the fourth bracha? You know, like questions like that really intrigue me. And everyone has, like, their own sort of, like, issues, like, what was the first course, the main course, were there choices? Everyone has their things. So the Gemara is, you know, channeling a particular approach, like, what kind of clothing were you wearing? The simple shot we would have assumed would be that Moshe Rabbeinu is wearing the Big Day Kohen Gadol. The Torah tells in parts of Tzaveh that as opposed to a regular Kohen Hedyot that wears 4 begadim, the Kohen Gadol has 8 begadim. So what's Moshe Rabbeinu wearing? Presumably the 8 begadim. And the Gemara in Tainis says no. Moshe Rabbeinu is wearing a chaluk lavan. And what Moshe Rabbeinu is wearing is a simple sort of a white garment, a white cloak. That's what Moshe is wearing. Some of the Achronim wonder, I don't get it. If Moshe Rabbeinu is a Kohen Gadol, so why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu wearing the regular Big Day Kohen Gadol? So one thing we would point out is maybe the rules yet have not, like, firmly been established in those 7 days. We haven't fully gotten into all the normal halachas. Salvechik had a very beautiful suggestion. There are elements of it, I believe, in the Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos, but in the Salvechik Chumash, in the end of Parsha Sav, they quote it from Rabbi Joshua Rapp's Parsha series notes. Okay, so where they offer the following suggestion. Salvechik suggested that in these 7 days, Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, was not a regular person. Moshe Rabbeinu was elevated. Moshe Rabbeinu was like a Kohen Gadol. We also know that not only was Moshe Rabbeinu a Kohen Gadol, but Moshe Rabbeinu had added elements also. Moshe Rabbeinu was like a king. Moshe Rabbeinu was like the Sanhedrin. He was Omeid B'Makom Ayin Aleph. We spoke with this a couple years ago on one of the Parshas here. Moshe Rabbeinu was elevated in many ways. And Salvechik suggested that there is the regular Kohen Gadol, and Moshe Rabbeinu is functioning as Kohen Gadol and Melech, etc. The normal Kohen Gadol, what's happening in the process now of taking Aaron and making him into the Kohen Gadol, so most Kohanim Gedolim, like a Melech, require a formal appointment. They require a minoy. And it has to be done often with Shemen HaMishcha, with a certain kind of anointing oil, or maybe even just wearing the Big Day Kahuna, Merubah Begadim. But Moshe Rabbeinu did not require a formal kind of appointment. because of the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's own Kedusha and his relationship to Ribbono Shel Olam. He wasn't like a person appointed as a Kohen Gadol. Moshe was so elevated by his own status of holiness that he was able to function and to be like a king, like the Navi he was, like the Sanhedrin he was, and like a Kohen Gadol. He was a level above. And therefore, he didn't have to even wear the regular big day Kohen Gadol, nor did he require an appointment. The unique status of Moshe Rabbeinu was one that was more elevated. We would point out, it may be not coincidental that specifically in these 7 days, as we transition, so Moshe Rabbeinu is the only one that can really serve as Kohen Gadol right now. No one's formally been appointed, and maybe it's not the normal kind of halachas of Mikdash, but that's at least one ha'ara, the unique status of Moshe Rabbeinu, serving as Kohen Gadol now, until Aaron reaches that Madrega. Second ha'ara, again, all part of this larger observation, is what exactly was the status of the Mishkan when we were offering these karbanos? What's their status? Some of us may know, sugyas in the end of Meseches Zvachim, that there are really two places where you can build a Mizbeach. One is in the formal kind of a Mishkan, or the formal Mikdash. That's where the normal karbanos are offered. But there was, at least in certain times in Jewish history, the ability to offer karbanos in what's referred to as a bama. A bama is a mizbeach, an altar, which is found not in the actual mikdash. And there are certain karbanos that you are allowed to offer then, and there are certain karbanos that you're not allowed to offer in a bama. I believe Tosfos points out in Megillah that once we had a mikdash in Yerushalayim, so bamas are no longer permitted. We have lost the power to offer bamas at that particular time. But what is the status right now? When Moshe Rabbeinu is functioning as a Kohen Gadol, like the Gemara in Zvachim describes for us, so what exactly is the status of those karbanos? So says the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Aleph. Let me just mute everyone. Says Tosfos on Daf Ayin Dalet, Lamed Dalet, sorry, in Meseches Avodah Zarah, quoting of Yaakov Mi'orleans. Hamish Dalfil Niskachu Mikomako, Kol Zayin Yemei HaMiluim Shehaya, Moshe Ma'amid HaMishkan Umefarko, those 7 days, what was Moshe doing? He was putting up the Mishkan, putting it down, putting up the Mishkan, putting it down. Hayah Nechshav Kimo Bama. The Ain Big Day Kahuna Bibama. I'll tell you another Pshati says, it's a second sort of ha'ara we're making, but relates to the first one also. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu not wearing Big Day Kahuna? Because at that particular time period, it wasn't really a mikdash or a mishkan yet. The karbanos he offered were really like a bama. They were really like a bama. That was their unique kind of a status. If you look, many of us know that there is a Shita Mekubetzes on many Mesechtas. It's put out by Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, who was one of the Rebbeim, they say, in the revealed Torah, in Torah Sanigla for the Arizal. But Rav Mordechai Ilan and Rav Yaakov David Ilan, his son, put out at least, again, different versions of a Knesset Rishonim and Shita Mekubetzes on Kachim, where they took other Rishonim and put them out. In the Shita Mekubetzes to Bechoros on Daf Dalet, points out the following. It's footnote 40 over here if you see it, and that's as follows. Tosfos seems to maintain, as does the Meiri in Kiddushin, that this is the Mikdash at that point in time was referred to as a Bama Tzibor. It was a Bama, but one that had value for the whole Tzibor. He suggests that is also the position of the Ramban in the Ramban, his commentary al HaTorah, okay? He points out, however, that if you look in the Shita Mekubetzes, we have a bit of a challenge, which is that he points out, if you hold that it's really a Bama Sibor, So we offered karbanos there. What were the karbanos that we offered? A chatas, an ola, and a shlamim. Those karbanos, some achronim assume, were really karban yachids. They were offered, let's say, a par chatas, Aaron's offering a karban. It's a karban offered as an individual. Yet it's being offered on a bamas tzibur. And not everyone thinks that's really okay. So there is some discussion. Was it really a regular kind of a bamas tzibur? Or to what extent did the Mishkan during these Shivas Yimei HaMiluim have this unique kind of a status? It's sort of like a bama, but it's also not like a regular bama. A regular bama is separate from the Mikdash entirely. And there, maybe you can't offer a karban yachid. But this bama is almost like a rule breaker, one could suggest, of a bama, because the Mikdash is going to be built here. So it's like a bama, but also not like a bama. So we're seeing this sort of interesting phenomenon. When we have these 7 days, the Shivas Yimei HaMiluim, and we are getting ready for an offering of the regular Mishkan. So one rule breaker seems to be it's all done by Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe without a minoy, Moshe not wearing Beitei Kehuna. Second, it's not really a Mishkan, it's more like a bama. But even if it's a bama, it's not so clear we can offer these carbon yachids right now. We don't typically have carbon yachids that we could really offer. But it may be that it's like, again, this rule breaker kind of a metzias. These 7 days are like 7 days of mikdash that we never had or are not going to have again. It's not like the bama totally separate. Not like the mikdash is really functioning. It's a Moshe Rabbeinu with Abedei Kehuna. It's a bama with carbon yachids. There are unique things here going on. General clarity thus far, 1, 2, and 3. Okay. Issue number 3, which comes up, is the following. Why are you bringing a chatas? Why is someone bringing a chatas here? What exactly is this par, which is offered as a chatas? What's going on? So we're going to see, generally speaking, 2 mahalchim in Rishonim. The first observation is that in general, if you look at the difference in Parshas Tetzaveh, where we're commanded to have 7 days of miluim, of getting ready, and you look at Parshas Tzav, where we actually implement it, so one discovers a bit of a shift. There are certain differences. One of them is noted by the Malbim. The Malbim says it's interesting. In Parshas Tetzaveh, the carbon is just referred to as a par. But in Parshas Tzav, it's called a parchatas, a parachatas. Why the shift? What's actually going on? And further, where is there a chatas? Why am I really bringing a chatas? What was the sin which took place? So mahalach number 1 is to offer the following suggestion. Says the Ramban, you know why you're offering a chatas? Who's offering the chatas? Aaron HaKohen. And why are we offering a chatas? We're offering a chatas because of Chet HaEgel. It's kapara for Chet HaEgel. The Ramban, Vatan Bazeh Shakol Goy Lefanach, Vayapar Chatazeh Lechaper Al Maisa HaEgel, V'Karbano Shal Kohen Mashiachu. In the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, we're told that when a Kohen Gadol messes up, he brings his own kind of chatas. And this is in many ways the carbon that Aaron HaKohen is bringing for the fact that he played a role in Chet HaEgel. This is the kapara that Aaron HaKohen has. Says the Malbim, that's why in Parshas Tetzaveh it's only called a par. But in Parshas Tzav it's called a parachatas. What took place in between Parshas Tetzaveh and Parshas Tzav? Parshas Kisisa, Chet HaEgel. So initially it's offered as a par, and says the Ramban, Hashem knew eventually why it would be brought as a chatas. But he hadn't really sinned yet, so we don't really designate it yet the same way as a chatas. But in Parshas Tzav, when Aaron actually brings it, he's bringing it as a Par Kohen Mashiach. He's bringing it as his Chatas. It comes as a Chatas for Aaron. This is in general Mahalach number one. Whenever we see a Chatas, and we're not sure what the sin is, Nazir Mitzora Yoledes, Rosh Chodesh. Whenever we see these Chatases, and we're not sure exactly what's going on, so the first Mahalach is, there really is a Chet. Chatas comes for a Chet. There really is a Chet. What is the Chet? The Chet is Chet HaEgel. And for the Ramban, at least, it's a unique Karban offered in particular for Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen. Yet we know there is always a second Mahalach. The second Mahalach that maybe when you have a Chatas, and it's really not so clear why exactly you are bringing a Chatas, that maybe it's not really brought for a sin, but rather it's brought for something else. Says the Chizkuni, Tam Acher Lama Zen Nisraf, he's wondering why he gets entirely burned outside, okay? Kamosh Mefarish Akasuf Chatasu, Nesinas Tam Lama Nisraf, Lefi Sheba, Lechitoi HaMizbeach. It's brought to chitoy, to sanitize, to purify, to cleanse the mizbeach. In that sense, what's amazing, the machlokes is it brought for a chet or not? Is it the chat that's mahalach number one, chat milson chet, or mahalach number two, chat milson chitoy? What also emerges, you're bringing the chat that's because you're looking towards the past, or you're bringing the chadas because you are looking towards the future. Towards the future. Chadas as chet, chadas as chitoy. Chadas, there was a sin. Chadas in terms of purifying, sanctifying, going forward. What's interesting then is especially in the second Mahalach, it's again, for the first Mahalach, why are you offering it now? Because Aaron has to confront the past to be ready for his role in Mikdash. For the second, it's actually focused less on Aaron, the one makrivit, more on the Mizbeach. You have to get it ready for the Mishkan to really be functioning. So these same sort of Mahalchim that we've seen come up in the Miluim also. But especially for the second Mahalach, it's really a unique kind of a Karban. It's a Chatas, not brought for a sin, only brought for chitoy, and it has another unique kind of an element also. And this Rashi points out in his Perush on Chumash, says Rashi, what are you doing with this carbon? You are the es besar akar v'esamav v'zotis arof be'esh michutz l'machane chatas hu lo matzinu chatas chitzon nisrafas elazo. Normally the chatases that we offer outside, the regular chai, when a person messes up, doesn't get entirely burned. But this one is. Because it's a unique kind of a chatas. It's a little bit of a rule breaker, says Rashi. Normally, like the koanimi part of it, this one gets entirely burned. It's purifying the mizbeach, a unique kind of a karba. So we've seen thus far three ways in which the karbanos of the miluim have a unique kind of a status. Number one, it's Moshe doing the avoda, wearing the white clothing. He's the only one that could do it. No one yet has been appointed. Number two, it's not really a Mishkan yet. It's sort of a Bama, but maybe it breaks some of the normal rules of Bama. Point number three, it's a Chatas, but maybe not a Chatas on a Chet, but a Chatas of Chitoy, a unique Chatas for purifying the Mizbeach and for getting us ready in a certain sense. There is a fourth way that this karban is unique and breaks certain rules. That what's going on here breaks certain rules. That is a piece, Rav Schechter points it out, it's a brisker rav, in the meaning of Tmura. He has an extension of it, it's quoted in Ginas Egos, or it's written in Ginas Egos. Happens to also be in Rav Schechter on the Parsha, and Parsha Sav, where it's focused a bit more on the Miluim, than is there, and it's a very interesting observation that the Brisker Rav had, and which the Schechter actually extends to a particular context. General clarity thus far, 1, 2, and 3. 3. Okay. Yeah, Avi, you question?
What do you mean change
the name?
Oh,
I don't know why. A lot of the Mefarshim in general downplay any of the differences. They downplay the Chilukim. I don't have a good, like, for the first shot, you have, like, a good Mahalach. For the second one, it's, no, the par is the par chatas. You know, there's not much to say for that. I don't know if there's, like, a good Mahalach for that shift. But many of the Mefarshim were not bothered by it at all. The Malbim's very much bothered by it. Many of the Mefarshim are not so bothered by it at all. So, I don't know, but I can say I'm in decent company of Rishonim that didn't seem to be particularly bothered by it. Not that it answers the question, it just is downplaying, you know, it a little bit. Yeah. Okay. This third carbon, it's a chatas, there's an ola, and there's a shlamim. The shlamim, if you look in Chumash, let me bring up the psukim here. They're just long. Give me one second. When the Torah describes the carbon shlamim, it's clear it's being brought for Aaron and Aaron's children. One second. Look in Pasuk Chaf Tes Yud Tes. We'll get there in one second. I'm going to give a little bit of background information. Sorry, I should be clearer. Give some background information, then we'll preach what's going on here. In general, when you have a carbon shlamim, which is brought by multiple people, it's a carbon of shutfin. Multiple people. So there are two avodas that you often do with a carbon shlamim. One is called an avoda of tenufa. You wave the carbon. Another avoda called an avoda of smicha, where you lean on the carbon, Typically, when you have a carbon shlamim, if David, Avi, and Jonathan decide, you know what, I'm inspired, I want to bring a carbon shlamim bishutfus. So what do you do with the tenufa, with the waving? What do you do with the smicha? Those are sugyas in Meseches, Menachos, and Daf Tzadi Gimel, and Daf Tzadi Dalet. The halacha is, only one of you does the tenufa. Only one of you does the tenufa, the shaking. That's it. As far as the smicha, you can each one do the smicha, but you have to do it one after the other. David does it, then Avi does it, then Jonathan does it. That's how it goes. How come? Because even though we're partners, we are on some level also independent in our bringing of it. And the halacha is that when you do a tenufa or a smicha, you can't have a chatzitza, a separation between you and the animal, between me and the animal. So if David put his hands on first for the smicha, I put my hands on top of David's hands, there's a hefsik, a chatzitza. David's hands are between my hands and the animal. That is because each one we are considered to be, even though we're partners, we're separate enough in our partnership that we're not viewed as one. So if David does it in the smicha, I can't put my hands on top. The halacha is, you can only do tenufa once on an animal. So once one of you does it, you're done. But for smicha, you can do it multiple times. So as long as you're not doing one with hands on top of the other, you're entirely good to go. That's how it normally works in the halachas when you have multiple people bringing a carbon shlamim together. One of them does tenufa, because multiple can't do it at the same time. You can only do tenufa once. And for the smicha, you do one after the other. But look at the psukim. Look at the psukim. What happens in Parshas Tetzaveh? Tells us, that says the Torah as follows, if I can find it. Bikraf is a par lifnei ol moed. Who's doing? What's going on with these karbanos? V'samach Aaron uvanav es yedeyem al rosh hapar. They're all on some level doing the smicha. Points out the Tosefta. The Tosefta tells us that, Tosefta in Menachos, that when it came to some of these avodas, like, as an example, the Ayil HaMilu, if I can find it here also. Let me see if I can find it. If not, I will just move on. Again, Vayikribes El Ha'ola Vayismichu Aaron Avaz Dem Arosh Ha'ayom Vayakribes Ha'ayom Ha'sheni El Ha'miluim Vayismichu Aaron Uvanav Es Yedeyem Arosh Ha'ayom. They were all doing smicha. How did they do smicha? How are they going to be able to do it? So I would have thought, well, they're partners in these karbanos, Aaron Uvanov, they're being offered for all of them. So I would have thought, one after the other, they can't all do it at the same time. But says the Tosefta, not so. Aaron Uvanov could do it all together. But smicha was all done together. Says the Brisker Rav, the Tinufa with Stama was also done all together. The Smicha and the Tinufa were all done together. How could they be all done together? I thought when you have partners are viewed as separate and distinct. So if Aaron's hands are there, then I put my hands on top of Aaron, there's a separation. Shutfin can't do smicha altogether. They can't do tenufa altogether. How come here you can? The first thing we would say is, interesting, another example of these karbanos breaking rules. A bama, but more karbanos. A chatas, not for a sin. It's something, it's a moshe, not wearing bidei kahuna the whole 7 days. It's not so clear what's going on here. Another example, a karban of shutfin. But they can all do smicha. They can all rest and lean on the carbon together. They can all wave it together. It breaks rules. The Brisker Rav says it breaks rules for an intriguing reason. The reason is because there are two kinds of partnerships. There's what's called the standard form of partnership, which is a partnership in which we all decide to become partners together. We have separate interests. We decide to come together as shutfin. But when we do that, we still remain somewhat distinct. It was our decision to come together. Okay, so I'm an individual, you're an individual. We have mutual interests, so we remain partners, but with our own distinct needs and motivations, we remain somewhat separate. So we can't do the smicha and the tenufa all together. But says the Brisker Rav, there's something else. That is called a shutfus bal korcho. It's a shutfus in which you are joined together against your will. In this case, who joined Aaron and his children together? The Ribbono Shel Olam. When it's a shutfus done against your will, the integration is much stronger. You could have argued the opposite. The Brisker Rav says the integration is much stronger. You are, because it's not about your own interest and your decision to sort of form a partnership. The partnership is imposed from on top. Imposed from on top. And therefore, it's much more of an integrated form of partnership. You become one unit, Aharon Uvanov. The Torah said, you're multiple people, but you're functioning as one. And therefore, you can all do smicha together. You can all do tenufa together, because we are all viewed as one unit. We're not viewed in separate ways, meaning the karbanos here were not only unique in Moshe bringing it, Not only Moshe bringing, again, Moshe as a big day, with a big day Kohen Gadol, in at least those Shivas Mimiluim, not only different in the Bama piece, not only different in the potential of a Chatas, not part for a Chet, but a forward-thinking Chitoy Mizbeach, and this one, a Chitzona, which is entirely burned, like Rashi said, but it's a unique Karbanos here, maybe even specifically the Shlamim, maybe even all of them, where they're doing the Smicha Letznufa, as a shutfus, as partners, but a more integrated form of partnership, where they could all do the tenufa and all do the smicha together, which is very, very powerful. Very, very powerful, the way that they come together. Rav Schechter suggests, Derech Agav, so I think, here's an interesting point. Is it possible that there are other forms of partnerships which are imposed from on top? So one suggestion, we will credit Dr. Willen with this one, is that maybe Klal Yisrael as a whole, you do find this with Tzibor. Klal Yisrael, Rebim Zel Hazad, the Gemara Shavuos, Naflam Etes, that we are maybe more integrated, that Tzibor is viewed not as a bunch of individuals that came together, but an integrated collective that's imposed from on top. Rav Schechter thinks that certain halachas about Jewish community, you can't necessarily opt out of. That as an example, I'm a member of the Shalvim Kiryat Chinuch. So whenever you build an Eruv, so you build an Eruv around the area, you put up the poles with the strings, it has door, whatever you're building your Eruv to, it's a Pesach, you do what you got to do. We do something else called an Eruv Chatzeros. What's an Eruv Chatzeros? I don't know if you all know this, but the rabbi, let's say, has a box of matzahs, and he makes everyone joint owners over those matzahs. It's what makes all of us to live, in a certain sense, like in the same domain. So I can carry this an Eruv from my house to your house. It's like we all own it together. Let's say you have that one guy that gets up and says, I don't hold the Eruv. Not only do I not hold the Eruv, I want to ruin your Eruv. I want no portion in those box of matzahs. I will not let you make this area into one integrated rishus. So Shechter thinks that in certain cases, he's not sure that that really works. It could be that when you're in that kind of a case, that a shutfas bal korcho could exist also with community Eruvim. That when you decide that you're living in a particular community, there's a certain kind of partnership which is forced upon you. You can't opt out of, and you become like one. And there's something called the shutfas bal korcho, even with some halacha lemaisa ramifications. Let's chazer what we saw today. Again, a little bit of a different day. Less focused on the karbanos that we're more familiar with and that we offer, but I think intriguing nonetheless. And it's a lot of psukim and chumash, it's good to be familiar with. In Parshas Tetzaveh, as well as in Parshas Tzav, we're told that there were 7 days when we were consecrating, inaugurating the Beis HaMikdash, getting Aaron, HaKohen, and his children to be on a certain elevated level to be Kohanim. During that time, it is on the one hand already beginning to function like a Mishkan, yet Moshe builds it, takes it down, and there are some indications that status is up in the air, and that there are certain kinds of karbanos taking place here, certain kinds of avodas taking place here, that we would not typically find, because it's like an in-between status, we were suggesting. You may have a different, unique kind of shutfas taking place here, honors children. You could have a chatas, which is brought only here, just to purify, again, even the chatases that are brought for purifying, usually purify people. This is going to get a purifying a mizbeach, getting the mikdash ready for us, getting the mikdash ready. Then there are other sort of, again, it's a bama, but not a bama. It's all about the inauguration, the transition from nothing to having a normal and functioning mikdash and mishkan. I'll just point out, there is some discussion, I think, based on Pesukim and Sefer Yecheskel, but asilavo and binyan bayishlishi, you know, we anticipate what kinds of miluim we're going to offer. Some of us know Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam is a certain mikdash. Are we going to build it? Is it coming down from Shamayim? You know, what kind of karbanos are going to be offered? But the Yerushalmi tells us also, you know, often it doesn't go from, you know, it's not 0 to 100 right away. The 7 days of process in many ways represent what the Yerushalmi tells us. The Geula comes kima kima. The Geula comes a bit at a time. And we never go from nothing to everything right away. It's a time period of inauguration, a time period of purification, a time period at times of, I'm sorry I'm darshaning here, but of dealing with some past sins of a parchatas, got to deal with the past and build towards the future, and that tahalich, and that process of geula, as we gear towards, be'ezras Hashem, a full and functioning mikdash. The 7 days that were there, I'll end with a vort if you want, if it's okay if I do. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's basically Kli Yakar. It's an awesome idea. It's classic Chabad, if you're interested. But I'll just end it anyway. It's a good word to know. And it counts both for parts of Tzav and parts of Shmini, if you are so inclined. Vahiva Yom HaShmini is the first day of the new Mikdash. It's the first, it's a good 3 weeks idea. It's the first day of the Mikdash. Said the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's a question of the Kli Yakar. It's odd to call it the 8th day. It should really be called the first day. There are the 7 days of getting ready, and then it should really be called the first day. Why is Vahiva Yom HaShmini called the 8th day? Jenny pointed out that in general, Raya's in Chazal and the Gemara, 7 represents this world. 7 days of the week, the 7 Shemitah cycle, the world of Teva. The Maharal tells us that 8 always represents the level above. The world of La'asid Lavo, I think the Gemara says that the harp played nowadays has 7 strings, but La'asid Lavo will have 8 strings. It's a time period of the future has 8. Tell the Baba Terebi an amazing idea. We often don't perceive well the relationship between the 7 days of preparation for day number one. The relationship of the 7 days to Vayhi Bayom HaShmini, the day when we finally have a Mikdash, it's not always so clear how that transition takes place. It's not always so clear the relationship between 7 and 8. Says the Babich Rebbe, just as in the time of the Mikdash, the 7 days set the stage for the 8th. The first day was not called the first because it needed 7 days of background prior to us being able to officially start. It was day number 8. It was the first day of the functioning Mikdash, but it was built upon a 7 days that preceded it. Says the Babich Rebbe, so too our avodah in this world is to prepare in this time period of the 7, to do everything we can. A Mikdash will come. The Mikdash will look like a new reality, something that we're not used to, something that we can't anticipate, a totally new world of Yemos Mashiach. But, says the Babich Rebbe, it'll be built upon the 7 days, all the avodah that we do here. It won't be the first day of Mashiach's time. It'll be Vayhi Bayom HaShmini, built upon all that we did. So we should be zochet to be experiencing time period of Biluim, of getting ready for the eventual 8th day, for the time period of Geula Shlema.